Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. Now, John, we're going to start off market-wise talking about interest rates because those continue to rise in the U.S. and we continue to see a flattening of the yield curve as the short end is continuing to catch up to the long end. Overall, though, interest rates, even look at something like the 10-year, it's up to almost 2.5%, and it's just been on an absolute tear. I understand the argument being that still very low interest rates historically, but you look at the direction of change and the rate of change, and boy, oh boy, interest rates technically are spiking right now, albeit still at generally low levels, but again, there's a lot more debt in the world right now. John, what do you think about this interest rate environment where rates are continuing to move higher, mostly on the back of, well, central bank policies, I believe, but take us through your thoughts on this environment.
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Well, you know, I saw some morons on CNBC the other day talking about how soaring interest rates was actually a really good thing because it means the economy is stronger. Interest rates go up when the economy gets stronger, and that means corporate earnings will rise, therefore buy stocks. That is all wrong. When interest rates spike like this, especially in an incredibly indebted system like we are now, it raises everybody's interest costs and it breaks the economy at a certain point. And the question is, where's the 10-year treasury have to go before everything shifts into reverse in a big way? And you're already seeing that in the housing market now, where mortgage rates are going up faster than treasury bond rates. And you're at like 5% with mortgages in the U.S. now, or close to it, which is kind of just chilling the housing market because prices were already unaffordable, but you had cheap mortgages, which made them, you know, made houses almost affordable for a lot of people. And now you take away the cheap mortgage money and these prices are unsupportable. So that's the kind of thing that happens when interest rates go up too far too fast, and they are going up far and fast right now. So it's just a question of how far they can go before the system breaks. And we can't know that until after the fact. But the higher they go, the closer they get to the point at which they break the system. So, you know, what's happening now in the financial markets is very important because it contains, if it continues in this direction, basically an existential threat for the leveraged speculating community out there. So we could blow up all kinds of different things if the 10-year treasury goes to, let's say 3%. Let's say that's the limit. It's not that far away. You know, a few bad days and you're there. And all of a sudden, everything could change. So we're kind of looking at that now, where if current trends continue, then everything we think is true will turn out not to be true and the system will just spin out of control. So very interesting times and very dangerous times if you're long anything that's affected by interest rates.
Yeah, John, these are turbulent waters to be sailing in. And the same people that said that rising interest rates are good are probably the same people that thought rising inflation was good as well. It's good for banks, but it's not good for everyday people. And as these interest rates rise, if we do get above 3%, let's say it even gets to 4% on the 10-year, 4.5, 5, there is a breaking point where the markets will have a corrective move, and that will rein in the interest rate hiking policy. But there's also the huge debt levels that at a certain interest rate, if you go up to 3.5, 4, 4.5, 5, the interest payments on the debt alone would be unpayable mathematically. So is that really the true breaking point where we'll probably see some posturing when it gets to that level and say, hey, no mas, no more?
Well, yeah, at some point, because the mechanism of rising interest rates is that, first of all, there are a lot of financial instruments out there, a lot of really exotic stuff that depend on stability, more or less, in the financial markets. And those that are based on interest rates or, you know, foreign exchange rates, currency fluctuations, those things, you know, have a winner and a loser. And the loser can be made insolvent if he loses big enough in the derivatives market. So rising interest rates puts interest rate swaps at risk. At the same time, they raise the interest cost for a lot of people who are already highly leveraged and can't roll their debt over at higher levels without going bankrupt. So, you know, you've got a lot of different players out there that blow up when interest rates go up. And now we've been conditioned over the past 30 years to look for the Fed put. In other words, to try to figure out the point at which the Fed will step back in, push interest rates down again, bail everybody in sight out, and reignite a new bull market. And basically any trader on Wall Street who's younger than 60 years old, this is basically all they know, you know, that they've been living in this environment forever in which the government steps in and bails them out. So they expect it to happen again. So you see a lot of speculation about there out there about what's the strike price on the Fed put this time, you know, and that's a big question because the central banks of the world are facing inflation for the first time in this super cycle. So this is a wild card. It might scare them enough to put the Fed put at a much lower level in terms of like the S&P 500 or something, which means we've got a lot more pain out there before they step in and try to bail us out. And then the question is, would it even work? If they tried to bail out the markets by cutting interest rates and liquefying the system when inflation is already at, well, in real terms, double-digit rates. Yeah, you know, we'll see. I suspect that the answer is no, but stranger things have happened than the Fed not being able to save us again. So again, fascinating stuff from a an economics nerd standpoint. But, you know, if I was a money manager, I would be having trouble sleeping at night because everybody's watching. You know, all your clients are watching you and you don't have the slightest idea where the Fed put is. You don't know if it's here or if it's vastly far away. And your career basically depends on you being able to make that determination in a way that turns out to be close to true. And you have no idea how to do it. So, yeah, it's a terrified set of money managers out there watching this and just, I guess, shaking like a tree as interest rates keep going up.
Isn't it the fact, though, that we need to see what the markets do? Because if the markets go through a big correction, which we have seen in this environment where the Fed has been supportive, when the Fed pulls back, markets go through a big correction, even a collapse, and then the Fed steps back in. So right now, don't we just need to be watching the U.S. equity markets and seeing if we do get into that environment where everybody is hitting sell and who knows, markets even move limit down, kind of like we saw during that COVID washout?
Yeah, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are really important things to watch because there is a Fed put out there where they will step in when the carnage gets sufficiently bloody. And we just don't know where that is this time because they feel like because of inflation, they really need to be more aggressive. But yes, they'll totally step in at some point. They will cave in a heartbeat if, for instance, big tech starts to tank. And the guys who basically pay the government's bills start to lose trillions of dollars, which is what it would be if the NASDAQ really collapsed. So they'll step in. But then the question becomes, can they do anything now? You know, would it make things worse if they cut interest rates to negative territory in an inflationary environment? Nobody's ever tried that before because it's such a stupid thing to do. But our guys are just that stupid. You know, the people in charge right now are probably the dumbest generation of politicians and bureaucrats that have ever existed. And you can count on them to do things that historians are going to look back. And the historians will write entire books on the stupid mistakes that we're making out there right now. And to move from here over to the story of de-dollarization kind of illustrates the stupidity of the people running the show in the U.S. because we basically are kind of trust fund babies here. You know, we have this reserve currency that all the rest of the world wants, and they give us real stuff in return for this meaningless, you know, computer bits and bytes or pieces of paper that we send the rest of the world. And we're not smart enough to try to preserve that. So what we're doing instead is antagonizing the rest of the world to the point that they're trying to bypass dollars as a reserve currency and as a medium of exchange. And for instance, right now, Russia is, because of the sanctions that we've imposed on them after we kind of sort of forced them into this Ukraine war, they're now demanding that Europe pay them rubles for natural gas, which would just bypass the dollar and the euro as major currencies and elevate the ruble into almost the same class as the big reserve currencies. And China's watching that with great interest because they would love to do the same thing with the yuan. You know, they would love a multipolar world in terms of currencies where there isn't just this one dominant currency, that there are many different currencies that you can legitimately trade in. And the countries that produce and manage those currencies benefit from the fact that they've got a, you know, quasi-reserve currency now. You know, we're not the only one. you know, there are now maybe, let's say, 10 trillion too many dollars in the world for the dollar to lose its reserve currency status. In other words, if we're just one of many useful currencies out there, then people don't need as many dollars because they don't have to use dollars to buy oil, and they don't have to use dollars solely to back up their currency. You know, they could back up their currency with lots of other things like oil and gold and yuan and rubles and you know, have a nice mix instead of just a bunch of treasury bonds. So all of a sudden, there's all these homeless dollars that have to go somewhere, and they'll come back here to try to buy U.S. assets because we're required to take them back. And that'll make prices soar, make the dollar's value tank. You know, you've got this scenario that is kind of the end game for a reserve currency. This is sort of what happens when a reserve currency country has to run a big trade deficit in order to create enough currency to serve as reserves for other countries. That blows up their economy, and then they have a big inflation, and then they, you know, we're headed for something like that, which is historically not unusual, but could have been avoided. You know, if we weren't morons, we could have kept this inevitability at bay for a much longer time.
Well, John, that was very eloquently spoken for someone that runs the dollar collapse website and founded.
Yeah.
So I do think that we are at this tipping point as the U.S. as a reserve currency. But so far, most people's response has been, what would actually replace it? And what you just outlined would be along the lines of what Jim Rickards has outlined about the SDRs, the simple drawing rights, where it's a basket of currencies, maybe some commodities like oil and gold in the mix as well. Do you really think that there is steam picking up where this could actually happen? Because while we're seeing all this and all the news about them using back channels, even India bought a lot of oil from Russia, not using rubles, but using their rupees, and Russia accepted it. They also said they'll accept gold. I think at this point, they'll accept any payment outside of the dollar. But simultaneous to that, we've seen the dollar moving higher. We've seen the dollar keep surging higher, as obviously some people are moving to it as a safe haven. So it's two interesting forces at work. I mean, what do you think it would actually take to break away and actually start this new system? And what would that mean for people that are holding U.S. dollars or assets denominated in U.S. dollars?
Well, yeah, it is true that when there's trouble in the world, the dollar goes up. Even if we're involved in the trouble in the world, people still want dollars because they still perceive it to be a safe haven asset. And it is still a safe haven asset. But we're accelerating the process, other countries moving away from the dollar. And that doesn't mean it happens overnight, but it just means it's happening faster than it would have happened if we were doing a good job of managing our own currency. Now, you know, what does that mean for people who own dollars? It means they lose value. And if you own a currency and it's being inflated away, or it's being sold in the global foreign exchange markets or whatever, the currency you hold goes down in value. So yeah, if you trust the US government and hold dollars, you lose in that kind of a scenario. And you mentioned gold. I think it's a very big deal for gold here because, yeah, all right, rupees and rubles and things like that, you can use them to trade and everything, but you don't want to own too many of them as a reserve asset. But you also know you don't have to own a lot of dollars now because you don't need them to buy oil. So what do you back your currency with? And gold is the logical thing in this world. You know, there could be a time where Bitcoin is in that conversation, but not quite yet. Right now, if you're running the Bank of England or even the Swiss National Bank or something, you know, you need to be looking at gold as your basic reserve asset to partially replace the dollars that you don't need anymore. So it's potentially a big deal for gold. You know, that's one of the catalysts that could send gold much higher is if the world's central banks decide they want to, you know, increase by 5% their gold holdings. That's all it would take for all the central banks out there with all the trillions of dollars of fiat currency that they own to put a real wind at the back of gold's price. So that could happen too. Although, you know, shorter term, I'm a little worried about gold and silver if interest rates spike and the stock market tanks. You know, that's kind of a separate, more short-term problem that I think precious metals definitely face. They could be the babies thrown out with the bathwater in another extreme taper tantrum. So, you know, longer term, great for gold. Shorter term, be cautious. Just keep dollar cost averaging. Don't just dump everything else you've got and jump into gold, because eventually central banks are going to want to own a lot more of it. But it is nice to know that the long-term picture is bright for something like that.
Yeah, to your point, John, never a great idea to go all in on anything, especially when you're hoping for what would be such a world-changing event, something that happens every 100-plus years. But hey, right now, Russia is really just looking for any sort of currency, any sort of financial products to take in to sell some of their goods, and that's on the back of a lot of sanctions. So we'll see if this division continues, and to that point, when we do get the next big collapse or big fall, and when the Fed needs to pivot. A lot of question marks, and again, no one knows the timing on those, but as the Fed and central banks hike rates, we do usually see some sort of a pullback, if not a crash, to make them switch course. We're not quite at that point yet, so let's see how the rest of this year plays out. John, thank you, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll post a link to your website below, and we'll chat again in another couple weeks. Have a great rest of your week, John.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you.